KRK, its management, or employees of Rollins College.
There you go. Now we're cool.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys.
What, the robots are coming for your job, too?
Yeah, you never know.
Oh, they do. Corey's been ringing the
I've been
the
ringing
bell
the alarm
for
bell for a while. I actually almost felt kind of vindicated the other day. I was in a restaurant, and who's that guy? Jim Cramer. You guys ever seen him, right?
The
guy who rings
right?
the bells, yeah. right, and all that, right? I thought I had him tuned out, but it turned out I was listening to him. And he actually said, he said something to the effect of, I don't know, something about interest rates, how it was affecting businesses here in the U.S. And he said, you know, the only way businesses in the U.S. can make money anymore is just by firing people and replacing them with robots.
That's what they've been doing for quite some time.
Oh, yeah, but it's nice to hear some of the mainstream media finally say it.
But you know, he's been doing a lot of mea culpa for the last few years, ever since he was the cheerleader for the Bush administration, and everybody winded up losing so much money through his advice.
By the way, you know, there's a movie coming out. It's actually fan fiction on reality.
Madoff.
No. There's a movie coming out. It's with George Clooney, and George Clooney actually plays Kramer. That's the irony. Yeah,
really?
Right? Yeah. And the plot,
that should be interesting.
The plot line goes that somebody comes into the studio and takes him hostage while he's live.
Is it the new Coen Brothers movie?
It could be.
Is there one about the Romans, Caesar, something?
No,
about
no,
Caesar?
No. It's not that. He's got that movie coming out too. This is a separate movie.
Oh, okay.
A guy comes in, takes Jim Cramer, played by Clooney, hostage because he lost a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess then the movie ends up uncovering some sort of like high level corruption.
But watch out, his mess up. When was he cheering stocks up all the time? Wait a minute, that was under Clinton, Jesse.
No,
it was under Bush.
It was under Bush. Yeah.
Didn't he start before?
On the contrary, I started watching, he had a different program. I was watching during the Clinton years, and he was like so against, oh, that's not going to work. And then the following week, some stock would fly up. I mean, I'm surprised he still has a program.
Because the scandal was that you had the media that was talking about, you know, the analysts that were talking about the stocks were actually...
If somebody's losing money in the market, that means somebody on the other side's making money.
That's why he still has a show. Yeah.
And they were right by saying we are just entertainment. Of course, it's a problem when the network is presenting you as an analyst and not entertainment, but...
Well, they're manipulating the stock, believe it or not.
It actually, at one point there were studies done that he actually did have material effects on the market when he would make recommendations.
I wonder how many of his friends winded up being, you know, multi-billionaires.
I don't know about that. I doubt that. I mean, that's the sort of thing that you actually would get the cuffs for. That's too obvious.
Well, not really, because like, let's say for here, okay, we can say certain things and talk about a business and all that and not directly be advertising because we're nonprofit. We're not supposed to do that. But if I mention, you know, Corey's Cafe, I just had a coffee over there. It was really good.
This is too simple. I'll tell you who's making money off of this. Who made money off of him were the brokerage houses, Interactive Brokers,
fees.
Ameritrade. Exactly, it's on the fees. And by the way, they were the people that are advertising a lot during his show.
Mm-hmm. They,
you know, if he makes a recommendation, doesn't matter if it's for a buy, doesn't matter if it's for a sell, as long as there's trading activity, they're happy. So right. He was in truth be told, it was probably a fairly marginal impact on trading activity, but he did have an impact, a positive impact.
So
that's who's been on the take with him on the air. And it's not just him. I mean, basically anyone, any financial pundit who...
It's really quite interesting how these movies come out in election year. I mean, you have some movie that's about Benghazi, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You have Madoff that's coming off. You have that one movie coming off. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they're presenting each side of the issues that, you know, each party is yakking about.
Explaining the narratives.
Well, it's like Jon Stewart. I mean, that's where we used to get most of our news because he was joking about it, but it was pretty much factual.
He wasn't lying about it.
I miss him, too. Trevor Noah's doing a pretty good job in his shoes.
It's a different style. I mean, you can definitely tell the writers of The Daily Show are like still there, and they're brilliant people.
Right.
You know, like they pick up on very important issues. They always do a good twist. You know who I kind of like, enjoyed his comedy better than, it's wrong to do this type of comparisons, right? But then Trevor Noah, the show by John Oliver.
This Week Tonight. Great show. That's actually an HBO show. But
John Oliver, I know, it's awesome.
Is it on YouTube?
What's that?
It's on YouTube, but right? HBO.
HBO what?
HBO.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is it, the 90s?
Yeah, you know.
No, actually, they've come back insidiously, if you noticed, in your Netflix account trying to take your money.
About this. I mean, it was something along the line like, there is another Star Wars movie coming out, there is another Jurassic Park movie coming out, and we might be electing a Hitler.
It goes Star Wars comes out next month, Terminator's Jurassic Park's number one in theaters.
What's that? Terminator Geriatric, I think, no? Is that it?
Bush and Clinton, right?
Yeah. Not even watching that.
Oh, you know, I want to bring something up because while I was driving over here, with all the traffic and all that, I was really concerned about
before the traffic.
Yeah, I was really concerned about not getting my latte before getting here. And then there was a moment of clarity where I went like, "Why am I so worried about this when people are getting completely obliterated throughout the world?" And what I want to bring to the conversation is Boko Haram. They literally burned a whole village down, people and all. Yeah. Yet the mention here has been like zero.
I would tend to say the media, like almost anything in life, has inertia, has momentum. And with the mainstream media here in the U.S. has been touting ISIS, which, I mean, it's not, I'm not going to hold that against them. I mean,
it's not like they're friendly
people. But like when you've been running a story, you can't all of a sudden, I shouldn't say you can't, but they're not going to all of a sudden jump ship because of, someone they haven't been covering has done something terrible.
It's been going on for quite some time,
But the French are more the direct involvement here. But, you know, honestly, it's best they shut up, close shop preferably. It really is. It's one of the problems, right? When you have these, what's a conspiracy theory and what's news, you know? What's on the mainstream news is obvious. It's all motivated lies.
It's entertainment. It's profit generating.
It's not even entertainment. When they were doing, in Libya, under Obama, makes the invasion of Iraq look way cleaner, by the way. Libya was unprovoked war crime, you know? And that's where I started like giving some kudos to the little Paul, right? Little Paul, I don't know if he likes that.
Rand Paul.
Little Paul. Who did that was a high point of his career. Maybe he'll find that high point again one day when he filibusters against it. But and even the liberals, even like Democracy Now! Viewers don't realize what we did there, you know? Utterly unprovoked, engineered, and as a side effect of what we did there, we created ISIS there. You know, and in so much as we managed to bomb the hell out of ISIS in Syria, sadly, all they're doing is actually right now building up their Libyan base with our weapons. So the real Benghazi scandal is not the tragic and, you know, it's part of the job. You get risk pay, you know, when you're a diplomat going into invading countries, killing at least 50,000 people by the most, but most, not Americans, I mean, our allies, our friends who then became ISIS, who then became God knows what, yeah? So I'd rather they shut. You see what I'm saying?
Right,
Boko Haram is just as bad. So another campaign, heart-wrenching campaign about those poor 200 girls that were kidnapped by the Boko Haram. Another group of insane, religious fundamentalists. Yes, they're Muslims, you know, but I'm afraid of all insane religious fundamentalists of all kinds. But then we just tell that horrible, monsters. They are monsters. But what happened to the attempt of stopping them and weakening them? What is the French Foreign Legion doing in that region for several years now exactly? You know, what is the Southcom? Obama basically moved the American Empire into Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, the historical ironies are too painful for me to even spell out. Where they've been finally America, we had to wait for an American president to finally fully expand into Africa and get deeply involved in some real nasty stuff. It breaks my heart to say it. It really does. But you see what I mean? So their discourse is so fake. An independent journalist, and he really provided all the information, so I think it's pretty solid, looked at all the military experts that came on network television during the build-up to the Libyan invasion, and every single one of them was billed as former general, former admiral, what have you. every single one of them was actively getting paid by private military weapon contractors.
Didn't somebody
every
get arrested off of that
one.
Investigation, by the way? There was some
probably
guy,
the guy who did it, right?
There was no, there was some guy. I want to, I mean, not to pick on Fox. I mean, I will pick on Fox, but I mean, I'm pretty sure this guy, this was a guy who was like an analyst regularly on Fox. This is like within the last couple months. Mm-hmm. He got arrested. He claimed that he used to work for the CIA. He didn't. No. He claimed that he also worked for like the Department of Defense. He didn't. I forget why they arrested him.
Oh, that's right out of a Law and Order episode.
But was he like just a plant, like a yes man kind
of? No,
he
wasn't.
Stunt,
he was just crazy.
Imagine
he was
me one day.
Job. He was just
oh,
nuts.
That's so cool. Imagine one day you're going to open up Fox Network on an airport or something, and all of a sudden you're going to see me showing up all like clean shaven in a suit, you know, former sergeant and a security expert in Middle Eastern affairs. you got to laugh, right? Because otherwise you start crying. But yeah, so what I'm saying is that, right, we have all these conspiracy theories and some of them are, you know, it's a difficult aspect to what's a conspiracy theory, what isn't. But the main problem, the lack of confidence, it's everywhere, right? I mean, sometimes it's productive, I think, as the youth abandon the mainstream parties, as we talked in the first part of the show. So it's good to be skeptical like that. And then there's strange things, perhaps, like the vaccination.
Yeah, it's
which
weird.
Everybody hates on them, but I say I disagree. But I get what's driving you, the mistrust. You're not sure what's in your medicine. You're not trusting your doctor anymore. You don't trust your health insurance anymore. You don't trust your government anymore. And you're right. And you certainly don't trust the media anymore. And you're right. So, of course, people pick up on it. And can you still sell in America the liberal media? You know, that's a lovely little shtick that was used. Media, of course, is the least liberal. Even if perhaps the talking, the handsome man and the handsome lady on the news bureau might be liberals, but the overall bias of the media is very conservative and it can be well explained. It's normal. In giant for-profit commercial media. They can exist, but it's important to have an alternative. And sadly, still not enough people are looking at it. So we're still looking at that donkey show or whatever you want to call it that's called an election. And then,
if you think about it, the...
I can say that.
You can say donkey
no,
show.
Yeah, of course you can say that.
The propaganda that we're fed, it's almost, if you think about it, it's almost like a language virus. Because think about what you just said, the liberal media, right? Mm-hmm. So you take something that is inherently right-wing, and then you label it liberal.
Yeah.
So I mean, you're kind of like you're
which is,
changing.
Which of course means that too, in most part, except for this weird thing.
But it's like this strange manipulation, and it almost if you think about it, maybe it's completely intentional, you know, and very well thought out. Mm-hmm. That you have this manipulation of the political spectrum and the language that we use to describe the political spectrum and the political process.
Mm-hmm. And language matters.
Yeah, I mean, like George Carlin has a wonderful bit on it where he talks about how we have talked about post-traumatic stress disorder, right? And he argues, like, World War One, we call it shell shock, right? And it's like, hear it almost sounds like the bullets themselves. I mean, like, this is literally quoting George Carlin.
It's like poetry, shell shock,
shell
the sound
shock,
of it.
Right,
yeah.
Like, this is my footnote citing George Carlin, right? So shell shock, right? Then in World War Two, it's called battle fatigue,
right?
Now it's two words. It's a bit more like a condition, you know what I mean? And you have Vietnam, and that's, I think, when he argues that people start actually calling it post-traumatic stress disorder. It almost sounds like a disease, sounds sterile, you know? Mm-hmm. And he argues, well, maybe we had still called it shell shock, we would have given respect to Vietnam veterans the way they deserved to be respected.
Right. Of course, 45 years later, we're still not doing
enough.
Sterilize
this word in order to not... offend maybe in order to be nice, but niceness maybe
no it also I mean it's beautiful for me. I mean, you know, you guys know how everybody used to laugh at me in graduate school, like reading, you know, deconstruction literary criticism and stuff, and applying those tools to read economics, you know, that was pretty weird. And it seemed even I thought I'm doing this because it's really weird and fun and I like it and it's going to be a problem to get a job perhaps, but I'm pursuing my passion. But nowadays, oh my God, you're doing it. You're just doing it. I love it, you know, in an applied, clear way. I mean, so you see, yeah, it's like poetry. So shell-shocked... leaves the condition of the soldier in the explosion, right? In the violence. By the time it becomes, like I say, battle fatigue, and eventually it becomes PTSD. Mm-hmm. It's a diagnosis, you know? We forgot who sent them there.
Yeah.
Right? It happened to them.
Shock, really.
We are like pre-medieval almost, you know, superstitious. We're going back. In that sense, we're postmodern, mm-hmm. you know, in the sense of end of modernity. We no longer really seek to explain things scientifically so much in our at least everyday emotional life, but we go to these kind of statements of faith and the symbolic gestures. And
I mean, it happens with, like, psychologists to be blamed for this. But I mean, also I can totally see why you might have found interest in postmodern literature for economics. Economics is plagued with these type of features.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? When you said the word liberal, all I could think was, oh, neoliberal policy in Latin America.
Right, yeah.
Which actually means neoconservative in pop America.
All I could think was that, and how neoliberalism became this catchphrase for governments to just wing around and try to persuade other people that trade was good for our country and we should not care about foreign competition and we should not care about making the size of government smaller, even if our welfare state and our social safety nets are terrible.
And no evidence is falsifiable, which basically, according to high modernist philosophy of science, you know, positivism, Karl Popper, those guys, means that it's not a science.
Yeah.
If nothing I can say can change your mind,
then this
conversation, then it's a belief. Then it's a belief. It's an act of faith.
It's a dogma.
It belongs in the church.
Exactly. Exactly what I was about to say.
It's a dogma.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And a lot of it, maybe it's impossible to escape it, but at least you have to be aware of it. It's one of those things, right? Like often in economics, right? We translate the complexities of the real world to a simplified mathematical model. We do what we do with it, and it's legitimate so far, if the model is applicable and appropriate and convincing. But then we forget to translate it back when we enact policy that would perhaps have worked wonderful in the theoretical world of the blackboard. But there's absolutely no reason to think that it would work when you translate it back to the complexity of the real world. I mean, it's ABC. People in the Vienna Circle, like in the 20s, would say, what, you mean like you live in the 21st century and...
And this is all the
And this is like an issue that you have to engage in with serious, educated people? I mean, are we back in the 1100s?
This is one of the main reasons why I do still like libertarian thought in economics a lot. I mean, like, I like Marx and I like Veblen and all the institutional political economy, but Hayek actually was very much into this issue, right? And his Nobel speech is actually pretty fascinating, criticizing to some extent modern macro and Keynesianism by saying that these people have a pretense of knowledge. That's the title of the speech, right? And like he ends the speech like, what this discipline really needs is humility, to be humble, right? Because it's really not as technically scientific.
He's spinning in his grave.
You know, one thing that hasn't been talked about,
so well.
And I actually saw something this weekend that it's kind of funny, and I know you hate Bill Maher and all that, but he brought up a point.
Yes, I do.
Something that has not been brought up to the forefront, and it's actually, I'm going to play it for you.
Ooh.
It's funny. As much as you dislike Bill Maher, it's funny, but it does carry a point. So here we go.
How many have seen Bernie Sanders' ad that he put on with Simon and Garfunkel singing America? It's pretty powerful stuff. I couldn't help thinking maybe he did that because Simon and Garfunkel are pretty famously Jewish. And, you know, he's got a problem, perhaps, in a state like Iowa, and he's in it to win it, with the fact that, as we were saying, not very diverse, not many Jewish people there. So, Bernie, we got a hold of the ad that he made just for the people of Iowa. Skinner, to try to help with this problem. Run that if you would. Let us be
lovers, we'll marry our hearts together. Hello, Iowa. I am Bernie Sanders. Everywhere I go across this great state, I'm asked the same questions over and over. Can a Jew really be president? Have you come to take my baby? And are you Rumpelstiltskin? To these people, I say, you might be surprised at the number of Jews you're already comfortable with. Rachel Ray is a Jew, and so are Jake Gyllenhaal, Kate Hudson, Jack Black, and Ralph Lauren. Joaquin Phoenix and Lenny Kravitz are Jews. as is Gwyneth Paltrow and sexy but accessible Paul Rudd. The Harry Potter kid is a Jew. Both Iron Man and the Piano Man are Jews. And Shia LaBeouf, a mess, but still a Jew. Did you enjoy Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman having sex in the movie Black Swan? Let's call that what it is. Hot Jew-on-Jew action. Chelsea Handler, Elizabeth Banks, Gene Simmons, Jennifer Connelly, Scarlett Johansson. Jew, 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 Jew. And I haven't even mentioned OJ. No, not that OJ. OJ. Obvious Jews. So please, consider voting for me. I'm Bernie Sanders, and you could do worse.
Yeah. Well, so there you go.
I haven't changed my mind.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's entertaining.
But sure. He does raise the question. I mean,
you know, that's actually, I didn't even, now that you bring that up, I didn't even think about it in those terms. That's a tremendous victory for
yes.
him in Iowa.
Huh? True that, yeah. I admit, my God, I mean, now that you're saying, maybe I knew at some point, I didn't. I'm one of those Jews that do not play that, the favorite Jewish game of all, Spot the Yid. Yeah, my good buddy in Israel, Ronnie, and I, his late mom used to make that comment, and she is a very funny and very cool old Jewish lady. But you know, we know that, yeah, we know right, that, right. You know, if you ever write, you sit around, they're like, oh, somebody's doing something right really impressive or something. Oh, they're Jewish, they're Jewish. I mean, oh yeah, I feel good about myself, thank you. Not really. So in that sense, I actually find it funny. I mean, I can pick at it. I mean, he can't help himself to be a, you know. Can't think of a word that I'm allowed to say. So there's a couple of things here. But, you know, it's an interesting question. I remember atheists have no hope. I mean, that's right. the most hated minority in America. But 14% of Americans recently actually basically said that they have no religion.
And increasing.
Yeah,
so,
no, it's growing very quickly. Yeah.
Once again, what the typical American portrayed in the media, both internally and around the world, by the way, given the important cultural importance of America and television and everything, is a very different creature than the real American. As a foreigner coming to America, that was a real revelation to me.
Globally. I also think that there is a lot of age issues here that we haven't touched on, that I think that's a show. You know what I mean?
Age.
But, I think that when you look at, say, the Iowa voters for Bernie, right? The younger voters, the stats for Bernie are, quite impressive. It's, 80% of
the
younger.
Is it closed
voters,
or open?
Right.
Because I remember, I just registered to vote, now that I'm a citizen and everything, and I still committed to never voting for anybody associated with either of the two parties. I've committed a long time ago before even having a vote. But I was wondering, really, but Florida is a closed... Right. So in order to have the right to vote, let's say for Bernie versus
right.
against Hillary, I'll have to register as a
Democrat.
Which I'm absolutely not willing to do. So I'm sorry, guys. I can't help you there, though, even though I'm still a little bit skeptic that, again, I mean, if he was a real risk, because that's when I was making that comment, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, do you really think he can pull it off? I mean, get elected and become a tool, I don't call that a success, of course.
Yeah.
In that case, it's almost pursuant. I mean, there are people who stand to lose a lot if he does
right.
even begin to do what he promised, right? And these people are extremely powerful
and
have the means,
actually,
you know, they run
Paul
both
Krugman
parties.
Actually mentions this in his defense for Hillary Clinton, right? At least Hillary is a candidate that is taking into account in her analysis, according to him, the stakeholders. Right? Yeah. That's what Bernie, I don't think.
I always thought he was wushy-washy and a little bit kind of wobbly-kneed or whatever the polite expression. Krugman. I never got into the Krugman thing, even though sometimes he wrote good editorials.
I've just been following the whole debate between Krugman and Reich.
I'm almost shocked.
I personally like Robert Reich's analysis and stuff like that, you know? But I think that Krugman is actually presenting this idea of, hey, you have to take into account... And honestly, it's not new.
You do have to take into account the stakeholders.
That's my
point. You have to take them into account in different ways.
In different ways, right? But what he's basically saying, and if you think about it, it's nothing new. He's being the center quintessential pragmatist.
Mm.
The quintessential pragmatist.
He's advocating for
pragmatism.
It's really bad, though. I mean, it's funny you say pragmatist. Because
I wouldn't give Hillary the pragmatist.
No, no. Well, right. I see. No, but exactly.
To Bernie,
he is the pejorative pragmatist. I remember even talking to some real old communists in Italy on a vacation one day with my parents and kind of and present a couple of things that I was thinking about. And I was talking about pragmatism, American pragmatism, being kind of the source of much of the, you know, the crazy postmodern Eurocontinental thing and how important it is to blah, blah, blah. Yeah, never mind that. But they were like pragmatist. Yeah. You know, they were to them, pragmatist was a curse word. It's and funnily enough, I always argued, I mean, why? I mean, it makes some kind of sense to be pragmatic if you have the proper values and you consider other people and you do all those nice, you know, assume a proper
That's
ethical position.
A lot of a priori, though.
Yeah. But you are now describing pragmatism precisely in that way, in this notion of an obstacle to change, you know, the, oh, go back, business as usual, kind of parrot repeating, not being able to even envision the possibility of something else. What the film The Matrix talks about, is, you know, the
pretty
people
much.
That aren't.
The idea is like, hey, let's be practical and continue more of the same dysfunctional system forever and ever. Or do we actually...
It's
like,
a lily-livered position.
Close our eyes and make a big structural systemic change, right? Which, like, going for a more radical perspective. That's honestly why I'm, like, I'm not mentioning Paul Krugman to kind of give him, like, a spot here or anything. Mm. All I'm trying to say is, hey, I think the general public should be aware of this kind of larger debate going on in the center left of the political narratives. I mean... It's easy to see the loud voices in the rights lots of the time, sure. Right? It's harder to make those distinctions in the American ethos of and politics, I think, when you're talking about people in the left, you know. And it's like basically
the moderate left, by the way, because there's millions of Americans who are lefties too, and their voice matters also. And they are, if anything, sometimes, you know, I'll agree. I find myself defending Bernie Sanders in those forums, typically saying, like I said, that you have to be somewhat pragmatic, but not that pragmatic.
You know, I kind of take a longer view of the whole thing in that, you know, either, and this is going to sound a little outrageous, I think either a Sanders or a Trump win would be a tremendous win for the American people, in that both are very injurious to the power structure.
I agree.
I mean, because all of a sudden you have these power brokers, you have the power brokers in either the Republican or the Democratic Party, that it's like, you know, the king has no clothes. They're just laid bare. It means nothing.
Just entertainment.
And you've got to succeed. It's like you're talking about youth, right? So, and you said that it might be, mechanically speaking, you explained to us how it's going to be, it's possibly going to be all about the turnout, right? And in many cases, actually, Democrats even have been, I mean, Obama managed to, you know, reverse the vote stolen, and more so, and have a landslide because significantly of young people,
minority,
of course, who really went through the very difficult process of voting in America. If you are a minority, given that they were obviously inspired, but I'm precisely afraid that of another disappointment, because I think we're no longer in the early modernity. People expected life to be horrible, brutish, and short.
Right.
And when there was a hope that maybe we're going to move out of this, we're maybe going to do something, there will be human rights, there will be representation, we could do something about it, you know, they ran with it all the way. But we need our consumption right away. And I'm afraid of these kids not... Another time they'll go out and vote their candidate in and he will betray them?
Yeah.
What next time, you know? So the cynic in me is all with you about maybe we need a good few years of Trump as a form of painful shock therapy.
He won't disappoint, for sure.
I don't know. Well, frankly,
I don't know.
I don't know.
You know, it's been pretty painful.
It'd be just another one.
I gotta say, it's been really painful the last 20 years. We don't need more pain. I mean, I'm in not that situation to be able to endure that.
And that's exactly what Jesse said. That's the thing that makes me pause. That's why I don't go there. That's the one thing that stopped you from going there. Because
there was an article on Zero Hedge about a week ago. I think I posted it to your wall. And it talked about, quote unquote, the victory of Trump. And the entire article, it starts with, you know, it basically presupposes racism, human rights violations, right? Mm. Just all kinds of horrible things. And then it asks the question, would it be worth it for the death of neoconservatism? Mm. Would it be worth it for the death of American empire? Yeah. Because of, you know, think about, I mean, as Trump would be the death of American empire. It'd be a return to basically wholesale nationalism.
Like
The entire Republican...
The Caligula of the Romans type of deal? Or like,
well, I mean, won't be able to play the game so effectively mediatized because, frankly, sadly, that's one of the real reasons and military experts, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but, I mean, it's just an untenable game. I mean, American empire is already very weak and weakening every day in a long-term pattern.
Right, yeah. Anyway,
the return to the effort is just...
I don't really understand why
is it that having Trump there. Because I mean, I didn't read the article, obviously, but can you expand on it for the people listening?
I mean, his policies are basically largely of national isolationism, right? Mm-hmm. You know, his talk of bombing ISIS or whatever, you know. Bombing ISIS anyway. Versus basically cutting off trade with China altogether, right? If you're cutting off trade with China altogether, I mean, you're looking at trade, you know, nationalism.
Yeah.
You're trying to internalize.
He won't sign a
he won't sign the TPP, right?
Or Atlantic.
It would be a collapse of the American empire. And it would be a collapse of, to a large degree, probably the American military industrial complex in that.
Dangerous game, but dangerous times, you know, we have to make the change, you know.
You know, the power structure that is in place in the Republican Party, which arguably has been the more hawkish of the two parties for the last 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. Arguably.
So very arguably.
It's
different style again, you know? It's not...
So let's do this thought experiment, right? Let's suppose that Trump wins the election.
Yeah.
Let's suppose that the day right after, and I'm saying this on radio, so it's probably a commitment, I move to Canada. And let's suppose that
I heard that in different countries from different people.
Actually, everybody's got a different. Everybody's got a different place.
And,
they
and the
go.
Funny part, have you seen this?
Just
meme?
Go.
There is a meme online that is like we need to actually build a wall between not Mexico and the U.S. but Canada and the U.S. for all the people who would try to emigrate there if he gets elected. But the idea is that so let's suppose that like I'm not in the country anymore, and I see what's happening to the U.S. in terms of isolationism, right? Like, what I'm trying to think of is, how can you expand capitalism without expanding the empire?
You don't. You go to basically just nominal expansion. The real expansion is over.
The real expansion is over.
The real expansion is over, and for capitalism to still...
Everybody knows economics knows that nominal expansions last for a little while.
Well, I mean, right? You know, the way our central bank is set up, if it had fiscal cooperation, in theory, you could have nominal expansion forever.
Yeah.
If you
had cooperation. That's my point, right? But like, once everybody realizes this is just fake expansion, right? You have to turn to other types of expansion.
Well, there's the example.
Point.
You have right. You have to stop with the growth fetishism and start.
So then it collapses.
Or you expand other ways because there was this has happened in the past before.
Well,
it
then
happened
at
the end of the 19th century.
The flip side is okay. You go full stop with expansionism. You like Trump has mentioned stuff about like okay if he had been running the war in Iraq, he would have made Iraq basically give us their oil. Right, just go full stop. All right, which is now that's all of a sudden that's going to turn into some sort of huge domestic insurrection in Iraq. Right, we become even more unpopular on the global stage than we already are, and now you have the failure of American empire another way. Mm-hmm. We good, Jesse?
It's coming out, huh?
Yeah,
it's coming out real loud, alto.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
that wasn't true. Oh yeah, just he's mixing something in the back. That's what he's done. I see. Yeah, well,
so
that's
you were
right.
Saying that
I think with a candidate, it doesn't have to be Trump, but somebody like Trump, I think American empire basically fails one way or the another rather quickly.
You think so?
Yeah.
I personally think it turns bellic.
It turns
bellic, violent.
Violent
war, okay. Big war. Big
well, it already
war.
Is.
And then you get it over with.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, no, this is
get it over with.
Yeah,
I mean
we're
point,
treading
you know,
on scary ground.
Theory, maybe, but just maybe.
I don't think that's conspiracy theory.
Here's
just
the deal, though. Like, I'm thinking in terms of 19th century empires, right? And like the whole theory of colonialism and how you need to like expand to other countries and extract from developing nations and like extractive. Economies, right? Rich resource economies, right? and keep on growing capitalism. And you need that expansion because at some point you're producing more stuff because you got more resources and you need demand, right? At the global scale, right? Now, once all countries stop doing that, right? What do you end up having?
I don't know if anybody...
What that finishes in is World War One.
Right, yeah.
All the empires were bloated with goods that they just had to shoot guns at each other.
The question is, what does World War One look like today? And the answer
that's a really big question.
The answer is
what's post Cold War world war?
It's the end of the world. It's the ICBMs go up and the world ends in mushroom clouds. That's what that war looks like.
Well, so, superpowers going on in full, that's another kind of war, but there's another world war that's been going on for a long time.
It's a world proxy war. Yeah. It's a world proxy war, right?
And a lot of people are constantly dying, so it's very different in many ways, but the pain and suffering is...
If this thesis is right, that capitalism needs this constant expansion, the proxy wars won't be enough to satisfy it.
That's a catch,
forever.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a catch. And all I'm saying is, hey guys, look at history. This has already happened.
Yeah.
Right? This isolationism type of behavior of countries, right? Yeah. That had big empires all over the world.
The difference now is that these empires have nuclear weapons. Yeah. And personally, I actually do have faith that nobody will press the button because we've been so close so many times. And not press the button.
But
we've
been spreading. Close. I mean, and you know, people are talking about Iran, which is another like bit of a non-issue on that level. But it's easy to get nuclear devices.
It's not easy. It's easy to get a nuclear weapon. It's very hard, to get a deliverable nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
There's us, there's China, and I don't even know to what extent China's weapons are deliverable. Mm. And then there's Russia. All right. The UK has weapons we gave them, right? Israel probably has weapons we gave them.
No, they stole it, actually. They literally hijacked an American ship that started the Israeli nuclear program. That's the original plutonium.
Well, that wasn't
nice. I think, to agree or another, I think that what we're really talking about, kind of getting back to the econ and the political economy behind it, is this idea of, hey, okay, have your... isolationist candidate run for president, have him close all borders, have him behaving the way he wants to behave, like xenophobia, all that stuff, right? What happens when you need to expand your markets and he is still isolating you? What do you turn into, right? And that's basically, I think,
a global depression.
What the Republican Party needs to actually say about nominating people like Trump. You know what I mean? In terms of like, hey, once you run through the series of events of someone like this getting into power that's going to become an isolationist, right? How do you end up like reaching the same like expansive
via crisis.
Growth and stuff
no,
like
I
that?
No, I mean,
right?
It's a miracle for a very powerful country that has, whose economic model kind of veered and eventually established as a kind of an imperial model, a little bit like you described. So, not that there wasn't a lot of innovation and productivity. I think that's why, as that declined in the 70s, the imperialism became more virulent to compensate. So empires don't decline gracefully. The Brits actually were really lucky to lose most of their empire in a way that was completely just
basically sold
they
it.
Lost it essentially right because yeah. of the World War II. So yeah, something let's give some credit. You gotta laugh, right? Hey, you know, it's like my dad used to like Holocaust survivor and stuff. And he used to make jokes about him all the time. So like, you know, what would we do? What would Hollywood do without the Nazis? It's like, you know, like half their movies. You know, that was kind of cynicism. It's a family trait. It's gonna be traumatic. Business as usual. The Paul Krugman. let's get Clinton. She's effective. She will maybe be best at trying to get back to where we'd like to be. And maybe that would have floated back in the mid '80s, or even it would have worked later than that, but not so much anymore. So this is literally delivering a crisis. I mean, let it happen. And I tend to veer. The only thing that stops me from going full bore with this is the only thing that gives me any pause, because I actually tend to agree absolutely, is the suffering
And it's kind of, I'm not going to be, well, I might be middle class, upper, even upper middle class will suffer some. But a lot of people will suffer tremendously. God knows how big it could get. I mean, millions. I mean, it could be humongous, right? Dark ages we could face. So it's quite miraculous to pull off de-imperialization. If America pulls it off, it's going to be a historical miracle in a sense, and will launch probably a country, America, to global leadership for the foreseeable future. If it pulls it off, odds are very low. It's really hard.
By the way, I think that the same argument, I mean, Trump on the isolationist side, completely with you on him trying to not sign TPP, on like closing borders,
yeah.
I don't think,
break the trend.
In that sense, I agree with you. I'm not sure to what extent is Bernie that different there.
Well, right.
Bernie doesn't want to sign TPP.
Right. Yeah, right.
And I'm not sure to what extent. You mentioned this in the previous hour, right? Like, hey, Bernie and Trump are actually not that dissimilar, right? And to some extent.
And why,
right?
They're popular.
Like, I wonder, to some extent. Hey, I've seen immigration deals of immigration, how Bernie wants to deal with immigration, right? And it's not very pretty, honestly.
No, I mean, he wants to sort of shut the borders as well.
Exactly. and he has very few comments about it. He's quiet because I think he's being smart as a politician about it. But to some extent, if you think about both scenarios, they both lead to somewhat dark places that are to some extent is like destroy the empire, but it's almost like
what I entertain in my own mind is that the empire isn't, I mean, look, we're not willing as a country, for whatever reason, we're not willing to take on the role of a Pax Americana, right, which is basically a military force that goes in and builds infrastructure in a beneficial way countries, right?
I mean, Rome wasn't very beneficial.
It's something. I mean, it's something that we are economically capable of. We are logistically capable of, but we don't have the political will. So, if we're not going to do that, the model of empire that we have now, it's very toxic. It's not going to last. It's not sustainable. So, end the empire. And to your point, yes, it does lead to a dark place from an economic standpoint. But I entertain this possibility in my own mind that maybe we find a new way. Maybe we find a better way. I mean, you know, the history of the human species. Look, when Homo sapiens, when we branched off from the Neanderthals, Homo sapiens, we survived because we were explorers and we were willing.
What do you mean by a new way?
I wish I could tell you.
Right. There's no, that's one of the problems.
I wish I could tell you. And by the way, the hitch is that if I did tell you, it wouldn't be a new way.
Actually, back to the 17th century. You know, one of the reasons where I think that, though we always think of the Industrial Revolution as the beginning of the world in which we live, I say no, it's not. It was a very important process in the middle of the era in which we live. It starts in the 17th century. Now, how? I think my argument for it is precisely that when we got to industrialization, you know, the theory, the political ideologies were already still changing and evolving, but already in place. Socialism was already articulated, well, already in the 12th, 13th century by radical Christians in northern Italy who went bonkers there. Cool people. until they got horribly tortured and burned, of course, and it got really ugly. But it is considered one of the... my senility. Maybe Charlotte will text me now. I'll post it on the blog with his Wikipedia article or something and a picture. Dolcino? I'm thinking. Ugh, sorry, my brain. Anyway, we already had notions of some kind of, you know, a liberal in the sense of free market articulation. We already had a kind of a socialist, what did McCloskey call it, a peasant ethos, you know, of equality and love. And things like that were in place. So you could align yourself. Are you going to be with the capitalist? Are you going to be the proto-socialist or socialist or anything like that? We are now just like we were at the beginning of modernity, totally lost in the forest, not knowing what language is even out there exactly, what the terminology is. So, like Corey was saying, solutions are difficult. What we based think of is a process by which good productive argument about these potential solutions or is in place. And that's what we don't have. So that should be the focus. I don't know how much change will be done immediately. Everything's about, I don't know, shaking the boat as much as possible. Now, I agree with you that, you know, Corey's scenario is kind of scary. I would like that. That's why my thing that I always say about the bipartisan, right? That what we need is, 80% of Americans probably don't believe in this, think our system is failing. Yeah. Now I think I can say it really with certainty, you know? That's why they're going to the two outsider candidates. So can we somehow channel that feeling, that correct observation to a productive argument about it? And here's where where Trump is better than Clinton. You know, though it's still cut out. I have to swallow a little after saying that phrase, just a little bit. In that, not going back to normal, right? So the pain, perhaps, but a push. It would have been better, and here I'll alienate some people, I'm sure, if Mitt Romney had won. Why? Because he would have damaged the American economy even more than Obama did in his second term. And therefore, right, I'm channeling my inspiration here is Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda Report, the Black American Socialist commentator. And he called the guy who called who coined Obama as the more effective evil. In the sense that they could, people think that his policies were somehow liberal or socialistic, even that they don't realize how conservative President Obama really is.
So I've got a friend who's going through drug rehab right now, and this kind of brings to mind a saying that they have that the addict has to hit rock bottom.
Mm, mm,
mm. So it's almost kind of like the United States, in some capacity, has to hit. Right. Right, and it's not just us, by the way. I mean, we're just talking about the United States.
Yeah, look at all the hope.
There are other developed economies that are basically in the exact same place, but
or worse, Western Europe comes to mind.
Or worse, yeah.
So, I mean, in a way, we kind of have to hit rock bottom before we get off the addiction of just keeping the status quo and just moving forward with that.
Moral of the story: vote for Trump.
What's that?
No.
Don't.
No. I would say, don't vote.
I don't vote.
Join me on
my
boycott of anybody associated with the party.
Taxation with
no representation. If either of them drop out of the party, then I'd be very happy to argue that, I don't know, no, I wouldn't. I mean, Trump, come on. I mean, the guy is using methodology that is very classic, very familiar to me. I already mentioned my father being a Holocaust survivor. I got interested in propaganda precisely to answer the question, how come the Germans were so civilized and turned into such monsters?
I almost wonder because it seems, his almost seems to be like a do-it-yourself propaganda. He doesn't have anyone writing it for him.
I don't believe. If so, then the man is really smart.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, maybe I have
a hard time believing.
Maybe it's just a natural thing for him, and that's why the mainstream media.
But it's a combo, always a combo. But Hitler was charismatic, but Goebbels was making plans.
But no, hang on. Follow me on this. It's almost like for the Republican Party. It's like, okay, we're the Republican Party. We will write. We will, Ted Cruz. We will write your propaganda. You know, Marco Rubio. We will write your propaganda. But then now you get. Now you got Trump off doing his own thing, and that's why maybe they just don't know him.
He has a separate team. I'm sure he has a separate team.
I have another hypothetical. Because
they don't write it for him, they can't control him. I don't know.
There is, I think, last week, like last show, we came up with another hypothetical case, which is even a bit darker, right?
Ooh.
Which is, let's suppose that Trump wins the elections, and let's suppose that now we have President Trump, but once he's up there, he basically tells all of his base and the entire American public, hey, I was just saying racist, misogynist stuff to get elected. Now I am a deal maker because I'm a businessman.
I thought you were going to say he's a raging liberty theologist or something.
There would be a small.
He has become the establishment again.
I would say that there is, okay, that's a loss, but then I would say there's a small victory if he were to literally say that. Mm. Because then, right. I mean, then there might be a moment of truth where people say, you know what? Yeah, we really are racists, right?
Mm. Mm.
Racism, worked to get us. I mean, that might give people a moment of a pause.
I think mostly, probably maybe more of a, if anything, people will then get that
Either that or then.
Look,
I mean,
we went off. We followed. We tried. We were disgusted by the system, and we got our candidate in. I think there's a higher chance that this will happen with Bernie. That's what scares me more.
I agree.
That he will get in, and then maybe I really think, you know, I just slammed into Obama a little bit, and he deserves every bit of it. But I don't. It's nothing personal. You know, maybe he was really believing he's going to get a pretty decent compromise given his mandate from the people and the economic crisis fresh and all of that stuff, and he tried and he didn't get much done, shall we say. So maybe Bernie Sanders could do the same thing. Maybe Trump will end up probably, you know, toning it down potentially
significantly.
Of course, some of my family said similar things.
about Hitler.
Don't worry.
He's just, you know,
mellow out.
That didn't work out so well.
No. And again, it shouldn't be like always like it's a taboo, right? Hitler. I mean, I'm not like, you know, Trump doesn't deserve to be compared to Hitler. I'm purely talking about a very famous. No, seriously, he didn't do anything yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's important.
He didn't do anything yet. And remember, I mean, last show, there was a couple of shows, I told that I think it's his style again. Just like the difference where Republicans bomb brown people for revenge and Democrats bomb typically more brown people to help them. That's the difference between the Democrats and Republicans when it comes to empire in America for a long, long time. Since after the Democrats destroyed democracy after FDR, you know, and made sure that his... what's his name, his vice president, who was popular, who would have won the Democratic nomination, doesn't, because he was too lefty. Like the American people at the time. Or today, too, they're more lefty than we know that. I mean, just the opinions of Americans, despite all the propaganda, are still much more, progressive than the political spectrum or the media portrays, et cetera, et cetera. Think that they're wrong or right, that's another story, but that's a fact. So you can compare. Sarah Palin was a similar thing too. I mean, it's the game of make them look goofy, make the intellectual elites mock them, and every joke about every meme on Trump, just wanting to tell all the people to fill my feeds with bad things and mocking the idiocy, the whatever, the Trumpness of Trump. Every time he gets more power. Every time you do it,
it's like the Incredible Hulk. The more you hit him, the stronger he gets.
It depends how you hit him, too, you know? Because honestly, the Democratic Party elite and the Republican Party elite, I suppose, in a large sense, too, are trying to sell. I mean, the Republicans trying to sell a guy who I think is worse on pretty much everything, including racism, sexism, women's rights, everything. The reasonable ones left in the race. Mostly Cruz, I suppose, is even scarier, but I don't even follow that detail, right? Essentially, what are they saying different? Essentially, what even is Hillary Clinton saying different? We've had 8 years of avowed women's reproductive rights government, right? That's one of the reasons they used to be for, you got to vote Hillary anyway, at least before Bernie came along. I at least will stop the fundamentalists from shutting down the country. Really? Have clinics, have women's reproductive rights and just general health care been under such assault in recent history in America? Republican Bush didn't do it.
Right.
You'd expect he'd be the family planning closer, right?
Didn't happen.
And I think Obama doesn't want. I think Obama believes in what he says. I'm giving him all the credit, but de facto, for the million of poor Texans. We're back to
maybe this entire show we've been kind of talking around, we've been missing the big point, which is that maybe we just shouldn't care who's elected president. We should be caring a lot more about who gets into Congress.
Local first of all.
I think local matters. I think the whole president run is entertainment,
right?
Yeah,
I think
it's a distraction. It's also a distraction, and there's we get political fatigue from it.
I do think I seriously have to some extent a kind of it gives you a sense of the very most general strata of analysis in terms of what are more or less political beliefs out there,
what is more or less most of the people
I mean, I don't. I disagree with that because the people don't. The people don't pick the candidates.
Am I going to like make a bet on these predictions? Not really, but it gives me a good sense of the general kind of like demography.
I think it's artificial because these are not candidates that are selected by the people. These are candidates that are put in front of the people, and then the people choose amongst them. It's a false choice. I mean,
and it's all posturing. What do they say? To listen to intelligence analysts saying, well, Bernie's health plan is like so, and let's do some analysis on what this will cost and what benefits. And then, I mean, you're doing great stuff, but it's all like Disneyland economics because they're not going to do any of that stuff. So, you know, we might as well, what if, you know what I mean? If Mickey extend the subsidy to Goofy, what would that do to the aggregate demand in the magical kingdom, you know? Sounds much more interesting, frankly.
Actually, yeah.
No, I mean, it's
you realize we sound like, especially you, we're sounding like Alex Jones and like right wing conspiracy. We'll be the nonpartisan.
The nonpartisan conspiracy.
I always liked him, even though he's a little bit off the bat right now. But at least he's been calling these things that this is a circus.
No, but I mean, like if we had choice, like let's just cast ballots for people who don't even nominate themselves. Right, just have the public cast a ballot. Who do you want? Who do you want to be president? I mean, sadly, it might be someone like Nicki,
so
Nicki Minaj
would
or someone.
Who would you choose? I would say
so vote for Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj,
hell yeah!
All right, who would you choose?
I would. I'm a little more realistic. I'd say Elon Musk. I want to go to space. I want an electric car that drives itself.
For her.
I would choose, actually, I would go, like, Guatemala's right now just elected a comedian. I would go with Louis C.K.
Okay, you know what? Louis C.K., that's fine.
Louis C.K.
I'll vote for Louis C.K. with you. He's enough of a cynic, right, to maybe, I don't know, do something productive. And
Louis C.K., like Jim Jeffries, you know? Like, 2020, yeah.
Just because Jon Stewart wasn't running.
No, he's too sober. He's too serious.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, so top of the hour here.
We're having too much fun.
Next, Front Porch Radio.
Right.
You've been listening to Punkonomics.
We need a voice of reason here a little bit.
Exactly.
We need somebody.
Porch Live radio. From WPRK, Winter Park, Florida.
Have a nice day.
Bye.
Bye. See you next week again, Wednesday from 2.